The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are reading, this one is from the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute. It's hosted on the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute. It's actually from 1998, if I am not mistaken. It says 98 to 2000, but I think the original, I can't remember, but it's late 90s. It's an attempt to break down from, you know, way before Bitcoin even existed, the idea of a financial cryptographic system and what it would mean and like how you would have to separate out the individual jobs and how you could create independence and assurances in that system. And it's by Ian Grigg. And I haven't read one from this Nakamoto Institute in quite some time. So they're an amazing resource. I know you guys know them. Definitely check them out and shoot them a thank you for making this available. And this is a pretty long one, so we're going to read this today, and it's really fascinating to see the perspective from the late 90s before Bitcoin ever existed. I want to really dig into this and then look at the layers of the Bitcoin system and kind of how it compares with Ian's vision for the future from the 1990s. So we will do that in tomorrow's episode. That'll be a guy's take, and we'll talk all about Bitcoin and the new cryptographic system. The new financial cryptography as it exists in the world today. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into this piece, again by Ian Grigg from the NakamotoInstitute.org, Financial Cryptography in 7 Layers. Abstract. Financial cryptography is substantially complex, requiring skills drawn from diverse and incompatible, or at least unfriendly, disciplines. Caught between central banking and cryptography, or between accountants and programmers, there is a grave danger that efforts to construct financial cryptography systems will simplify or omit critical disciplines. This paper presents a model that seeks to encompass the breadth of financial cryptography at the clear expense of the depth of each area, by placing each discipline into a 7-layer model of introductory nature, where the relationship between each adjacent layer is clear. This model should assist project, managerial, and requirements people. Whilst this model is presented as efficacious, there are limits to any model. This one does not propose a methodology for design, nor a checklist for protocols. Further, given the young heritage of the model and of the field itself, it should be taken as a hint of complexity rather than a defining guide. Introduction. Financial cryptography is substantially complex. For a field that is nominally only half a decade old by some viewpoints, it is apparent from the implementation work that has been done that many more aspects were involved than envisaged by early pioneers. Financial cryptography appears to be a science, or perhaps an art, that sits at the intersection of many previously unrelated disciplines: accountancy and auditing, programming, systems architecture, cryptography, economics, internet, security, finance and banking, risk, marketing and distribution, central banking. At such a busy juncture of so many distinctive bases of knowledge, problems are bound to arise. Not only the inevitable confusion and wasted resources, but the difficulty in acquiring technical, management, and marketing talent that can comfortably work in the field is an issue. As a preliminary step to the better understanding of financial cryptography projects, it is often of some interest to structure these disciplines into models that aid dialogue, comparisons, and decision-making. This paper presents one such model that attempts to describe the field in an introductory manner, as a preamble to greater learning. In this model, the terms finance and cryptography are stretched out in order to reveal the disciplines that might have been hidden within the name. Of course, no one model can plausibly cover the depth and breadth of a complex subject. The intent of this present model is to allow the reader to conceptualize the entire field, identifying the relationships of the disciplines without spending too much time on the detailed nature of each component. Depth is sacrificed for breadth. The seven-layer model. This paper introduces a seven-layer model, akin to the Open Systems Interconnect Reference Model, or OSI, of networking fame, as shown in Figure 1. In this model, finance and cryptography are stretched out, revealing five more areas of interest. 7. Finance. Applications for financial users, issuers of digital value, and trading and market operations. 6. Value. Instruments that carry monetary or other value. 5. Governance. Protection of the system from non-technical threats. 4. Accounting. The framework that contains value within defined and manageable places. 3. Rights. An authentication concept with ownership allocated to unit value and methods of moving unit values between unit identities. 2. Software engineering. The tools to move instructions over the net and hold numbers and information reliably constant on nodes. And 1. Cryptography. Mathematical techniques to state certain truths that should be shared between parties for passing value. An advantage of this model is traversal from the technical to the application, giving major stakeholders easy points of entry. We can start at the top, the finance layer, and work top-down. This is a process of mapping requirements and following them down into lower layers. This might be the place to start if engaged in high-level application discussions. Or we can start at the bottom, the cryptography layer, and describe toolkits to offer the higher layers. From ever more sophisticated lower layers, we can build our way up to offering a smorgasbord of options to the all-encompassing financial applications layer. Here, we choose a descriptive presentation that traverses bottom to top. Later, an example is presented in the reverse order, top to bottom. Cryptography. At the bottom is cryptography. To some extent, the pure science domain of cryptography solves problems in a mathematical sense only, but it delivers useful properties, including confidentiality, encryption algorithms, integrity, hashes and message digests, and authentication, digital signatures and hash chains. Cryptography can also solve special problems when correctly formulated. For example, how can Alice sign a statement of Bob's without being aware of the contents of the statement? Software engineering. It takes software engineering, layer 2, to usefully benefit from the properties of cryptography. We draw from database theory, atomicity, transactional integrity and recovery, and networking theory, feedback and item potency, in order to add such properties as reliability and robustness in the face of network and nodal unreliability, or designed unavailability, such as smart cards and handhelds. Software engineering provides us with a practical network. We can talk about sending a message across an open network and know that a message will eventually get to the addressee. With the integrity techniques of the previous layer, we can know that the information received by the addressee is as intended by the addresser. By using the specialized sequences of database theory, we can preserve the integrity of the messages over time, in the face of software and hardware failure. Rights. With both cryptography and software engineering providing a network upon which we can rely, we can think about distributing messages that are designed to financial cryptographic purposes. In the rights layer, we are looking for a protocol that provides a user with control over assets in an unequivocal, determinable fashion. Techniques aimed at achieving this include Identity-based systems, such as those operated by banks. Generally, such systems are based on the supply to an existing account holder of an account number and password that can access the user's account via an SSL encrypted web page. Token money that emulates the bearer cash instruments with which consumers are familiar. Transport mechanisms for other payment systems, such as the use of SSL-based systems to carry credit card information. Hybrid systems that eschew emulation in favor of bottom-up solutions more in tune with the power and limitations of the network. For example, SOX, S-O-X, is such a system, presented in the next section. A variation on this theme of environmental empathy, the E-language, is built from powerful capabilities concepts and can thus be easily turned into financial cryptography. And hardware-based solutions, such as smart cards. Although this is not an exclusive list. Accounting. The previous layers provide methods reliable enough to be used for passing something of value, which we call rights, over an otherwise unsuitable network. Now we need the techniques of accounting in order to store and manage rights over time. To financial cryptographers, accounting is a mundane field, and it has perhaps been attractive to ignore it. But experience shows that systems without conventional accounting features tend to lose the value entrusted to them. The techniques of the accounting discipline include double-entry bookkeeping, balance sheets, and the accounting equation. Accounting concepts permit builders of financial cryptography systems to build complex systems that guarantee not to lose value as long as everyone follows the rules, and to efficiently identify where the rules are not followed. The above layer, rights, defines what needs to be accounted for. As an example, the most basic method would be token money. An accounting model based on tokens or coins would need a simple store of coins for the client. The server would be more complex, requiring an account for unissued value, a float account, and a double spend database that matches the float amount. Governance. Once there is a guarantee that the digital amounts, the accounting numbers, under management can be securely passed over the net and stored on nodes safely, we need to cast our view wider to threats outside the technical domain. In any working technology, whether it be trading or cash purchasing, the threat of theft or abuse exists from parties who are trusted to manage the system. This problem, known as the agency problem, can be overcome with a wide variety of techniques that here I will label governance. Governance includes these techniques. Escrow of value with trusted third parties. For example, funds underlying a dollar currency would be placed in a bank account. Separation of powers. Routine management from value creation. Authentication from accounting. Systems from marketing. Dispute resolution procedures, such as mediation, arbitration, ombudsman, judiciary, and force. Use of third parties for some part of the protocol, such as creation of value within a closed system. Auditing techniques that permit external monitoring of performance and assets. Reports generation to keep information flowing to interested parties. For example, user-driven display of the reserved funds against which a currency is backed. As technologists, we strive to make the protocols that we build as secure and self-sustaining as possible. Our art is expressed in pushing problem resolution into the lower layers. This is an ideal, however, to which we can only aspire. There will always be some value somewhere that must be protected by non-protocol means. Our task is made easier if we recognize the existence of this gap in a technological armory and seek to fill it with the tools of governance. The design of a system is often ultimately expressed in a compromise between governance and the lower layers. What we can do in the lower layers, we do, and what we cannot is cleaned up in governance. Value. With a system that provides internal and external stability and security, we are now in a position to assign value to the structure. By value, we mean the unit of account, the meaning of that unit, and the range of numbers that are applicable. For example, a value layer might ascribe any one of the following to the virginal numbers of lower layers: U.S. dollars with a transaction range of 25 cent up to $500, bonds and stock representing tradable assets for the purpose of raising capital, loyalty points that can be awarded for purchase of goods, public goods such as tons of fish or of public bads such as tons of pollution, shares in virtual projects, funny money being internal money for corporate groups. As the software is somewhat unconcerned about this decision, we could just as easily use the software for any other value, but the business needs to harmonize the security and cost implications. We might also call this the contract layer, as any value in electronic form is an agreement between the holder and the owner. It is here that we design the contract that formalizes the agreement between an issuer and a user. Finance. Finally, on top of the value layer, which provides a structure for financial transactions, we can build our application. As we are concerned with financial cryptography, it is convenient to call this last layer the finance layer. Here we build an application that adds financial meaning to our designs. In the finance layer, we construct any and all applications that might readily be useful to users. For example, retail trading involving the purchase of goods, investment trading of securities, loyalty systems and gift systems to encourage repeat business but not to necessarily replace existing methods of payment, markets for the fair allocation of limited public goods, such as depletable fishing zones or pollution, intermediation of labor markets, closed or limited purpose systems, such as shareware sales or corporate group accounting systems, and many more. An example, the Ricardo system. Okay, let's take a break right there since we're through the first section and talk about our amazing sponsor. You know them, you love them. They are Swan Bitcoin. You know, don't use them just because they're hardcore Bitcoin OGs that are working their butts off to make Bitcoin better. Use them because they have the better service and at the lowest cost. Their fees are better than Cash App and Coinbase for auto buying, and they're the only ones with auto withdrawal to your keys. So say bye to Coinbase and hello to Swan. Set up your auto purchase of Bitcoin. You can do it every day, week, month, whatever you want. I do weekly, and never think about it again. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will get you a free $10 and also support the show. So set up your Bitcoin savings plan today at SwanBitcoin.com/guy. All right, let's jump back in. We are at the section, an example, the Ricardo system. In order to see the model in its descriptive role, I present an example, starting from the finance layer and working down, by following the roadmap of requirements. In practice, the model is not a design methodology for setting and mapping requirements, but can be used to reverse engineer an existing design. For the purposes of presentation and discussion of the mutually agreed contract between the builders and the stakeholders, the following description reflects such a process. Finance. Systemics, a company specializing in financial cryptography, built a system to trade financial securities. The Ricardo system, as an application, required clients and servers to maintain securities, and they communicated using a value system suitable to manage securities and cash. As trials evolved into experience, and strategic analysis of the securities industry evolved into appreciation, if not wisdom, the following primary requirements were built up: suitable for all securities, cheap, fair to all parties. This led to many subsidiary requirements. There must be no arbitrary limits on the activities of parties, arbitrary amounts of value to be managed. All can issue, trade, and redeem securities. Quote, nothing but net. Secure. real-time gross settlement, or RTGS. Minimize disputes by eliminating failures, or RTGS. Privacy and competition both help to keep cost down. The following discussion concentrates on the value architecture of the Ricardo system built by Systemix, rather than the trading aspects. However, experience shows that trading becomes a tractable problem if the value architecture is solid. Value. The requirements of the finance layer result in a derivative requirement for a value architecture, amongst other things. This value architecture follows directly after the finance layer, as the former defines the scope of the security requirements for the remaining layers. We developed a notion of instruments as follows. Definition of securities is broad, from small to very large value, extreme flexibility in design of instruments. Fair, the system should protect individual information, but reveal aggregate information to permit user auditing. Especially, it should reveal changes in assets. Cheap to operate. Full auditability in the event of disputes. No permission is required to participate. No assumptions are permitted with respect to the use of law or physical force, i.e., cannot rely on laws that disallow certain activity or enforce certain contracts. To meet many of these requirements, the notion of a contract for value was developed. This document, which we call a Ricardian contract, documents an agreement between the holder of a security and the issuer of that security, and provides for the flexibility requirement by allowing many and arbitrary clauses to be included. It is both program and user-readable, and is signed by the issuer of the instrument as a binding agreement for any holder of units of that issue. By having a strong basis to determine the nature of the contract in both human and program terms, we support the auditability requirement, and we can clearly identify the regime of resolution of disputes. Once set in stone with a digital signature, an identifier can be allocated, leading to efficient description in packets. Thus, this invention requires two things of lower layers, a signature form and a unique document identifier, which are addressed below. Governance. Once the value context is defined, indicating the size and nature of instruments, we can address the governance issues of payment systems and trading. These are substantially complex. In order to preserve systems intact in the presence of active fraud in the non-technical domain, many disclosure and informational duties abound. In the Ricardo system, we address the governance layer in three main ways. Static governance. Persistence and availability of the contract. Structural governance, separation of concerns and ensuring that reliable parties are employed to carry out singular elements of the protocol. Dynamic governance, real-time auditing of the balance sheet and other key values. Each of these is discussed below. Static governance. In static governance, we ensure that the user has the contract and that all concerned know that the user has the contract. In order to ensure that the Ricardian contract is always present and available to the user and is continuously binding to the issuer, we take the message digest of the document and use that message digest as the identifier of the instrument. Consider a message digest, for example, 9C, 7C, 9E, etc., being a large number of bits encoded in hexadecimal. The user cannot meaningfully interpret the string of apparently random information, so the software, and thus the software engineer, is more or less forced to maintain a database that describes what the message digest represents. As the contract is readable by software, it makes a superior source of data than any other, such as an intermediate database that holds the contents. And thus, we can reasonably assume, to the extent that the software can, that the user has the full contract available. The system will thus ensure that, to all practical intent, the user has the contract. This provides two cost savings, limiting both ongoing support and the likelihood of litigation. Structural governance. Within structural governance, we consider the question of insider fraud. The theft of both digital value within the financial cryptography system and of any physical value that underlies the virtual value managed by the system. With any payment system, there is an ability to create new assets or misdirect existing assets, all with no more work than a few button pushes. To address this, we use the approach of separation of concerns to address the agency problem of holding owners' assets, but protecting them from internal attack. This problem is normally handled by separating out management of day-to-day assets with the creation of assets in the system, and increasing the work required by any fraudulent transactions. The general schema that is advised to issuers is as follows. In order to limit the creation of value for each issuance, a special account is designated as the mint, or the creator of value. This account is placed in the hands of a reliable professional source, such as an accountant or lawyer, who will hopefully only have an interest in using the account under the probity of the governance regime. Then a manager account is designated that receives any new float from the mint and also returns any redemptions. It thus becomes the issuer's responsibility to ensure that the mint account is rarely used and then with full authorization and wide scrutiny. Meanwhile, the manager's account is regularly used, but holds only limited amounts of value for day-to-day requirements. The above are general techniques that are supported within the Ricardo system, but are as applicable elsewhere. Certain features get specific support, such as value caps on accounts and target account limitations. Note how these protection techniques that we use are partly outside the domain of the technical system. Rather than being outside scope, their discussion here is simply a reflection of the claims that the total security of the system is a holistic issue, and governance is the layer where we solve the security challenges that remain after we have attempted to solve as many as possible in the lower layers. Dynamic governance. Finally, in dynamic governance, we provide for monitoring of key values by the user community, and thus share the auditing burden. These values can be audited in an issued currency within the Ricardo system. Total value of digital float, the value issued by the mint account. Amount currently held in the issuance manager's account. From this account is drawn new value to be sold, or into this account, old user value is redeemed. The balance sheet of the currency, which is effectively the above numbers and the total of user value outstanding. As a balance sheet, the total float minus the manager's account should equal the outstanding user's total value. With some limitations, it is useful to provide summaries of movements, such as bought and sold values through the manager's account, the mint account, and the number of user accounts. Mirroring the governance model. It is also worth noting that when a currency is reserved by an underlying asset, for example, if a gold-denominated currency had physical metal escrowed to reserve it, then the above governance features should be mirrored for the reserves. That is, to continue the example of gold, there should be separate parties responsible for the ingress and egress of metal into storage. And there should be independent verification of the number of bars currently placed in escrow. Accounting. In order to meet the conflicting objectives of privacy and flexibility, Ricardo uses a conventional accounting model with some additional features. Accounts are units of allocation of ownership and are not identities. A user may create these on demand and likewise dispose of them. Lower layers must provide some mechanism for these accounts. Sub-accounts manage a particular form of value within an account. The subaccount is simply the intersection of ownership authentication, the account, with the value description, the contract. Transactions are movements of value from one account to another within the subaccount of the instrument. The back-end accounting engine is responsible for guaranteeing that each transaction is atomic and persistent. The result of transaction completion is the issuance of a signed receipt. Each transaction settles in real time, as measured by the issuance of the receipt. Both back-end and client keep a list of receipts as the sub-account. In order to meet governance layer requirements for open auditability, some accounts must present balance sheets on demand, and select accounts must be examinable. Because of the top-level requirement for cheapness, the accounting model was designed for complete reliability, right up to the support desk level. It does this by employing a group of non-obvious techniques. The issuer backend forces the client to maintain the same data, as discussed in the rights layer below. This helps to reduce the frequency of the request for information support call. A signed request from the user is merely a request for the backend to attempt a transaction, and the backend is at liberty to ignore it. Only the signed receipt is evidence of a transaction. In order to raise the profile of the signed receipt, balances are not kept anywhere in the system. Using these techniques, the accounting model supports the finance level requirement of being cheap to operate. If the client software is missing something, then it is a bug, and it properly belongs with the software developer, rather than being covered up as an issuer help desk problem. Rights. In order to ensure that owners maintain rights to assets that are managed on the servers, the SOX protocol provides these three major features. 1. Each user creates keys which are registered with the server. These keys are as determined by the cryptography layer below and are required to provide a unique identifier. 2. Value transfer is via three components. A. A key can be used to sign a payment order. This payment order can be directed to a target account or be open, bearer, and it has a fixed amount of some determined type of value. In this sense, the payment is analogous to a check. It differs from checking systems in that the SOX payment has no value until settled, whereas a check is expected to have value on signing. B. A payment order can be deposited to a sub-account. Settlement depends on a number of checks, such as funds in the source sub-account and a valid payment order signature from the source key. And C. The issuer server returns the receipt, mentioned in the above accounting layer. 3. Finally, in order to cope with network failure, the SOX protocol includes a mail feature that allows the server to communicate reliably with the client. Packets that must be delivered to the client are placed in the mailbox and returned on every mail request. Each piece of mail must be signed for, and if not signed for, is simply returned again. In the context of the value transfer above, there is only one piece of mail, being the receipt. SOX is a flexible protocol. By replacing the deposit request above with trading requests, it can be used for market trades as well as settlements. In the trading context, requests that are implemented emulate standard market functions such as looking at the order book for an instrument, placing an order, buy or sell, monitoring the progress of an order, and canceling an order. The SOX mailbox is used for the return of orders, assets, and results. Software engineering. SOX as a protocol spans both the rights layer and the software engineering layer. In networking, every transmission must be considered as a contender for failure. As a corollary to this, relying on a connection-oriented protocol, such as TCP, will not guarantee reliability, as its promise is only that the data that gets there is the correct data as sent. To cope with these problems, SOX assumes a datagram network only and handles reliability itself. Secondly, it bases communications on a request model, with each request being independent of the next, and each request only being complete when positive feedback is received. Thirdly, SOX requests are idempotent, so they can simply be repeated until some confirmation comes back that one attempt has succeeded. Unique request identifiers are included and used to filter out retries. Fourthly, in order to implement SOX, a client must treat each request as unreliable. For example, when a payment is written by the current client, that payment is recorded as pending, which is eventually matched up with a receipt arriving from the issuer. Or the client gives the user the opportunity to cancel the payment simply by reusing the unique identifier, and thus stopping the lost payment ever settling. In this way, Where it is impossible to guarantee a result, Ricardo extends reliability management out to include the user. Finally, SOX includes a comms layer that provides for key exchange for confidentiality and authentication purposes. Cryptography. The cryptography demanded by the upper layers includes a key exchange method. Newer generations of SOX use Diffie-Hellman key exchange, whilst older versions use RSA. A secret key encryption algorithm. IDEA was used in the past, triple DES in current versions, and one of the AES algorithms is a likely contender for the future. A public key signature scheme. For newer, DSA, and for older, RSA. A message digest method. SHA-1 is used, although MD5 has been used in the past. All of these algorithms are implemented as part of Cryptics, an open-source project that was spun off by Systemics in 1996. Cryptography and the cryptographic techniques used in Ricardo are well discussed in the literature. Concluding remarks. Advantages of the model. The model works well in tackling and reducing the inherent complexities of financial cryptography. It does this by dividing the field into 7 areas and providing an interconnection method, layering. Once a project is so layered, professionals within different disciplines can clearly delineate those areas within their expertise and those which call for other specializations. Thus, lawyers can recognize the governance layer as their bailiwick and pay due attention to it. Other layers can be treated more or less as black boxes, interconnecting with requirements down and features up. Likewise, programmers can concentrate on software engineering and rights, with more interest in accounting than governance. A project manager, with responsibility for delivery of a financial cryptography system, finds this even more powerful, as the model offers a natural checklist and vocabulary for coordinating the activity. As an analog of the 7-layer ISO reference model, it also wins on easy familiarity with what we are trying to achieve. What the model is not. The designation of 7 layers does not, in and of itself, encourage the design or implementation of system components that fall neatly into one layer or another. The notion of a Layer 3 protocol providing services to a Layer 4 protocol simply does not work in practice. Likewise, this model is not a design methodology. The description of a top-down requirement process is illusory, and in practice, the requirements analysis is more modeled by continuing and volatile negotiations between the layers. Whilst it is descriptive to state that a requirement is bouncing up and down between layers 1 and 5, inclusive, this does not give much assistance to a team leader in assisting a design process. Criticisms of the model. It's easy to criticize any model, as by definition, a model falls short of reality. Here are some points. Does the set of layers describe financial cryptography accurately? Heading us suggests, perhaps only partly in jest, the name cryptographic finance, implying that layers 1 to 3 may have greater claim to the original term. Also, the 7-layer model is static rather than dynamic. Once described, it works. But how did we manage to construct it in the first place? Also, are there really 7 layers? Are the layers as described? About each of the different layers, we can ask many questions, including some troublesome ones. Is the carve-up between cryptography, software engineering, and rights the best one? Does accounting deserve a full layer? Does governance really sit between accounting and value? Can we quietly ignore hardware, or slide it into software engineering, where most applicable expertise lies? My answer today is yes to each, but only time will provide the real answer. Also, the top-down requirements example of Ricardo seems to indicate a natural design flow or methodology, but in practice, the design process does not follow that path. Experience has shown that concentration on finance and then value is worthwhile. Then the vertical flow breaks down. In particular, a lot of time is spent bouncing around the lower four layers in a negotiation for the best compromise, with occasional forays upwards in order to tune the requirements. Governance always seems to come last in the design process, as its contents are an admission of what the rest of the architecture has failed to cover. And lastly, layers 1 to 4, up to accounting, are fairly solid in terms of their disciplines, practices, and methodologies. Layers 5 and up, governance, value, and application, are less well defined. This might represent a flaw, or it might indicate an intrinsically messy area. Perhaps coincidentally, the ISO reference model exhibits the same pattern. I believe that these criticisms are valuable in indicating that the model is promising, as they help to refine ideas, rather than destroy them. All right, that will close us out again. This was Financial Cryptography in 7 Layers, and this was posted, made available by the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, and this is by Ian Grigg. This is just, the fascination of this for me is looking back at trying to piece all of these different layers together and really hitting at the nature of all of the different jobs and disciplines involved in tackling this problem, that to attempt to create independence in a system like this requires so many different, as it says, unrelated disciplines in order to tackle and really understand all of the ins and outs of it, which, you know, makes sense why it potentially took this long to actually solve these issues and to see the difference between what came to pass, like what actually ended up being how to manage and create these systems. Because the beauty of Bitcoin is that this was essentially done without counterparty risk, whereas in this system, it seemed like there were still a lot of avenues where trust was required, where there was still a third party that was basically confirming information against other accounts. Like, the double spending problem didn't seem, outside of the fact that there weren't really enough specifics to really talk about whether that problem was exactly solved, it was still oriented in the client-server sort of relationship, which is how we thought of the internet. Whereas the nodes and the peer-to-peer aspect of Bitcoin doesn't really, that distinction isn't really made. If you're a participant in the network, you know, you validate. You are the client and the server. And because of that, anybody can join en masse or anybody can leave the network, and it maintains and governs itself. It essentially heals or expands itself according to its environment. Like, there's no, kind of, because of all the individual parts can be easily shut down, the fragility of all the individual computers not being a hindrance, the network itself is not a requirement. Because of that, it's anti-fragile. All the individual systems can enter and leave at will, and the overall network simply heals itself and corrects for the number of miners going up or down, etc. It's got its own mechanisms for sustaining itself into the future. And that's what I really want to get into, but I think this commentary, for the amount of notes that I've put down and the amount of little things that I've grabbed for it, to really dig into how it applies to Bitcoin, I think this is going to take way too long. And this is already, we're already coming up on like 45 or so minutes on this one. So I think I'm going to save this for a guys take episode and just kind of talk about, and maybe I'll get to dig more specifically into Bitcoin and just kind of compare it back to this piece. So we are going to do that probably tomorrow. I think that'll be a really, really fun discussion, because there's so much to break down in this piece. Again, this was written in 1998. Like, it's just so cool to see, you know, to see the precursors, the building blocks, to wrapping your head around how complex and how to actually get these layers and a system to work, and then what happens in the real world. So let's do that tomorrow. Let's compare where we are today with what the potential future looked like to Ian Grigg in 1998 with a Guys Take episode. And with that, We'll go ahead and close this one out. I hope you guys like this piece. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss tomorrow's episode, and share this out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space so they too can get the best in Bitcoin made audible directly to their ears. I'm out. I think that's all we need to do. Don't forget to check out swanbitcoin.com/guy. I got my beautiful face up in the top of the page now, so you can see that. That's a reason that you should go to it just to see that, if for no other reason. But you got to set up your Swan Bitcoin savings plan. Best auto buy that there is. Set it and forget it. It's done. With that, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, guys, take it easy.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.